We look around and what do we see? $16 trillion of debt, flash mobs of rioters, a clash of civilizations. The shifting sands of our modern times lead us to ask, can we grow some permanence in this world of change?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 791st edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, whenever we look and wherever we look, it just does not look very good. If we look to the world out there, we see a clash of civilizations as religion goes up against religion and economy goes up against economy. If we look to our nation and its states, we see our politicians stealing trillions from our children and grandchildren to enrich their cronies. If we look to our cities, we see hooded youth in flash mobs trashing convenience stores. Perhaps it's time to turn away from all that hoped-out change out there and look to ourselves for a moment. We have minds with which we can think and plan. We have strong bodies with which we can stand up to the environment. And we have hands with opposing thumbs with which we can manipulate tools. Perhaps it's time to take our assets into account and ask, can we grow some permanence in this world of change? Here to help us ask that question, dig around for some answers, we have permaculturalist and bioneer Trayson Heckman of DailyAxe.org. Trayson, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Good to have you aboard. First of all, you're a bioneer. I've been asked by a whole bunch of people to do a show on permaculture, and my friend Artie Mangan from Bioneers called and said, well, I have a bioneer for you I'd like to have you feature, and he's a permaculturalist. So first of all, what the heck is a bioneer?
A bioneer, instead of a pioneer, it's meant to be in the name a biological pioneer, so to speak. And it's this truly incredible community of solution-focused people who are finding answers to problems big and small all across the planet. And, it started with a yearly conference, which is coming up on October 19th through 21st in San Rafael, California, just where people gather to share these incredible solutions in the face of some really big problems. So it's a celebration of community. It's amazing solutions, amazing people. It's really a great thing, and it's spread all over the place too.
And one of your solutions, of course, is permaculture and permanent culture. So, what on earth is permaculture?
Permaculture was it's a ecological design science rooted in the wisdom of nature and the wisdom of indigenous people about how to live well in place, and it's ethics and principles centered. And its three core ethics are: care for the earth, care for people, and provide a fair share. And then it's rooted in these principles that are timeless and true anywhere you go on the planet, like produce no waste. That could look different in my backyard versus sub-Saharan Africa, but anywhere you go in nature, there's no waste. And so it's truly, like you said, in the permanence-impermanence realm, you know, these are things that are in the core function of life on this planet for creating conditions conducive to life.
Good enough. And you're also headquartered, I guess, as it were, with an organization called Daily Axe. What is Daily Axe?
Daily Axe is a nonprofit organization that focuses on permaculture and bioneers-oriented solutions. And we're centered in one core truth, that every single choice that you make matters. And so we focus on teaching people the basics of leadership and local self-reliance, how to grow food and keep bees and do gray water to transform your life, your home, your neighborhood, your community, your world.
So this really is kind of heading in the direction I was hoping that it would head, in that we're kind of turning away from the macro chaos of the world out here and trying to use ourselves as tools to create a better world, right?
Definitely. And recognizing, I'll often hear, you know, a lot of people say, we need systemic change, the political system, the finance system, all those sort of really big things, which I totally agree with. And the most accessible whole system that you have is yourself, is your life. It's the Gandhian be the change. And when you start with where you have the most influence and the most power, then you can increase your influence and increase your ability to affect greater change, again, in your life and rippling out from there.
So we always ask our guests, who pays the way?
In what sense?
And who pays the way for your dailyacts.org, for example?
Oh, okay, perfect. So we're a membership-based organization, so lots of engaged citizens and leaders donate to the organization for the work we do. We teach tours and workshops and activities, which sometimes are free and sometimes have a charge. And then we work with municipal partners. We work with local cities to help provide these solutions more at a community scale.
Now, how, that's interesting. How do cities see you? And I know that you work, like, for example, the city of Cotati, California. And so does the city actually welcome you?
It's a really incredible thing. I mean, we just started teaching citizens out in backyards and in neighborhoods years ago how to do these things, and we built up this incredible community of engaged citizens and experts that are very positive and solution-oriented. And in one example, and we work with the city of Cotati and other cities, is around water conservation. And, you know, a lot of times we haven't thought holistically about how our problems and solutions fit, and so we come in and we say, yes, we'll address water conservation, and we'll address stormwater, and we'll address toxic runoff. We'll address food security. We'll address community empowerment and engagement. We'll address caring for and regenerating nature. And so we stack these functions in a holistic way, which is what permaculture does.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This seems to me, water seems to be an excellent way of introducing the systemic processes of what permaculture really is, because it's not just water.
No. And, you know, you go into any one element, and it's a gateway to see how it fits with other things. And so as an example, we were just working with Cotati last weekend, and there was an unused pocket park, about 5,000 square foot of lawn, using maybe 30,000 gallons of water a month. And so we went in and worked with the city and citizens, and over the last couple of years, we turned it into a permaculture food forest, to where now there's edible medicinal habitat plants, there's educational signage. It uses, you know, 60-80% less resources and has much more benefit. And so we were out there with 30-plus Cotati citizens and residents last weekend, planting plants and harvesting plants, harvesting berries, and building community.
And how now, is that a permaculture culture that you're talking about?
Definitely, you know, building a healthy culture of what it is to be aware of these really big problems we're facing, and to be reconnecting to nature and finding your part and nurturing community. You know, that's an ancient and simple formula for adapting and thriving in changing times. And so when you're creating a culture and you're showing up seasonally at these places to get together and share food and steward the land, and build skills that people then take back into their homes and their neighborhoods.
And what does it do for them, for those people, when they develop these skills and take them home?
It's incredibly empowering. I mean, a lot of people are overwhelmed by just trying to navigate their day-to-day life, let alone deal with this confluence of climate and related crises. It's so overwhelming. And so,
it's just not climate, but it's everything is in crisis right now. So
yeah, that's why I said climate and related confluence. It's a confluence of crises. And so when people come together and they sit with this larger kind of scary context and tune into the fact that 24 hours a day in every nook, cranny, and watershed across this planet, people are coming together to care for place and care for each other, build skills, and it's rooted in the power of their daily actions, and it's rooted in 4 billion years of nature's wisdom that you could apply with your hands in your life, and there's a supportive community of relationships. That's a pretty powerful combination.
And it is, indeed. Is it kind of like community gardening?
It definitely is. I just spent the week, I'm doing a workshop on permaculture with Penny Livingston at Bioneers an incredible permaculturist. And I just spent the last week with her husband, who does an ecology of leadership program, and his partners. And, you know, very much speaks about community gardening, inner gardening. There's this, you know, the people aspect of it is a huge part of things.
Folks, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio program. I'm Michael Olson here. Today we're turning away from the chaos that exists out there in the world, the $16 trillion of debt, the clash of civilizations, the hooded youth mobbing convenience stores, and looking at what we can do, you and I, with the assets that we have, which of course are our mind, our body, our hands, our intelligence, and our friends and neighbors, and what we can do to change that with some permanent culture. With us today, we have Trayton Heckman, who is a bioneer and a permaculturist. And when we come back, what are the elements of permanent culture? Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're looking for an answer to the chaos of the universe. And there are a lot of chaos out there these days. But we can do something about it because we do have an intelligent mind, and we do have a strong body, and we do have hands with opposing thumbs with which we can manipulate tools. So the question is, what the heck do we do with these assets? One of the things we can do is look toward building a permanent culture, and that's what we're doing today with Trayton Heckman, who is a permaculturalist, a bioneer, and are you having fun with dailyaxe.org? It sounds like you're just having fun.
It is ridiculously fun. I get to hang out with the most inspiring, amazing people we could come across and have beautiful gardens in my backyard and our front yard and across the street and our neighborhood and beyond. And, yeah, it's super rich.
You know, I was having occasion to do an event down at Waddle's Farm in Los Angeles, which is a 300-unit community garden in Hollywood, 4.5 acres. But it's been there for like 35 years.
Wow.
So the development of that community garden is simply amazing. You know, it brings in immigrants from all over the world. And those immigrants are there building their gardens, and they look at each other, and they bounce off each other, and the extent of growth and beauty and productivity in that garden is enough to make you forget you're in Los Angeles. And there it is. And that's kind of where we're headed with permanent culture, permaculture. I also had the occasion some time ago as host of this radio program to host a guy named Bill Mollison.
Oh, wow.
And I was truly amazed with him. He was a very impressionable guy. Would you like to give us a thumbnail of Bill?
You know, I only met him once, but he is the co-founder of...
Was he wearing shoes?
He was wearing shoes at that time.
Okay.
Incredible stories of, you know, spreading permaculture all across the planet. And he leaves a powerful impression on people. And is what I think of as sort of a pioneer species, like dandelion. It's this very medicinal plant. It's good for healing the earth. It's super high vitamin A in the leaves, good for your liver, all these things. But it could have a bit of a bitter taste to the tongue sometimes. And that's how Bill's sometimes been described. He's incredibly brilliant, and has brought him and David Holmgren have brought an incredible gift to the planet, which, again, they didn't create. They're looking at nature, indigenous cultures, and they just brought a sort of a framework and lens for how these things fit together.
When you say nature and indigenous cultures, what exactly are you talking about? I mean, so a Montana boy would think, well, you know, I'm familiar with the Plains Indians, and they never stayed in one place for longer than a week or two, and you know, they're nomadic. So what do you mean by that?
So, you know, nature is, we live on this this beautiful planet that billions of years of nature's wisdom can be boiled down to one word: relationships. Ecology is a science of relationships. And so if we want to live in a more rich and permanent way on this planet, it's about following nature's operating instructions, which, you know, is what biomimicry and permaculture and a lot of different sustainability-focused efforts are doing. Indigenous people, that piece is about looking at how have people always adapted to changing times and lived well in place. Not all cultures have made it, but indigenous people who lived closer to the land have often been more attuned, whether they were migratory or stationary or whatever, of how to survive and live well in place.
That's because they didn't have pocket computers to keep them amused all of the time, and they had to pay attention to other things like the stars and the moon and weather and things.
Pretty important stuff.
You know, let's start with the basic elements of permaculture and see, you know, if we indeed have the wherewithal to go there. What about personal elements? What does it take, you know, to be a permaculturalist personally? I mean, you have to be intelligent, right?
You know, I think you have to be aware and pay attention, and you develop an intelligence when you start tapping into the wisdom and function of this planet and the brilliant people around you. You develop, you tap into a pretty deep wisdom, which can inform your thoughts and actions. And so, you know, observing and interacting is the core principle. There's a lot of different principles for permaculture all around the planet and how different people teach and use it, but it always starts with observing and interacting, tuning into where you're at and what's going on. And again, it's this ethics and principle-centered design science applies all over the planet. And then from there, you know, you think about, again, starting with relationships. Author Toby Hemingway, who wrote The Home Scale, the most popular book on permaculture called Gaia's Garden, who's helping teach a course for us with Daily Acts right now in my neighborhood at a local food forest, he speaks about this point when in your garden the whole place just goes pop and surges with vitality, and it's when you have the right elements in place, it's able to accumulate a richness to sift, sort, and transform any bit of sun, rain, nutrient into a thriving community of birds and food and bees and critters and things. And so it starts with healthy soil, you know, building healthy soil.
But back off just a little bit. I think it starts with people and the ability then to turn away from where they're headed to listen and observe the natural processes, right? I mean, you have to make a commitment there.
For sure, you definitely do. So I guess, so to pause on that, because I was thinking the elements of nature. So for me, the first time...
People are elements, too.
Yeah. As I mentioned, I'm co-teaching a permaculture workshop at Bioneers this year, which remind me later, too, because people, if they want to attend, I could give a code where you could get a discount for the conference. I walked into, I'd already had some other experience with permaculturists, but I walked into this half-acre backyard that used to be a lawn, the Permaculture Institute of Northern California, and it was this ridiculously lush, productive, fecund ecosystem, and it just created this sort of direct transmission. And this was Penny and James's backyard, and they had transformed it into a permaculture paradise. And so for me, and I've seen this happen for a lot of people over the last decade, you step into a place where you're ready for the knowledge, the information, the connection, and you get this kind of direct transmission. And from there, it's figuring out, once it gets inside you, okay, what was that? How do I learn more about it? How do I have it in my life, in my landscape, in my relationships?
Okay. So then let's start then right there with respect to us. You know, what we have to do is we have to be open up. We have to open ourselves up to receive this stuff. We have to be able to walk into that garden and open ourselves up to it, because we can walk in that garden and be closed and not get it.
Definitely. So that's why with our work and the things we do, it's about inspiration and exposing people to these incredible models of regeneration, you know, all over the place, backyards, balconies, wherever. And when you do that, again, in the context of talking about these big, painful challenges and rooting it back in the power of your daily actions, of relationships, of connecting to and regenerating nature, that's a powerful formula.
Now, let's go to the elements of environment before we go to a break here in a few minutes. What do we need from the environment to make a permanent culture?
As I was starting to mention, healthy soil is, you know, this precious thin little skin across our planet that's unique.
I always think, you know, when people talk about wanting to be green, I always say I'd like to be brown because it starts with brown.
Definitely. So healthy soil, you know, beneficial plants and animals, having the right combination of multi-benefit plants and animals working together.
Need animals? Do we need them for permaculture?
You know, a lot of life happens due to pollination and other aspects of having animals, the manures, the nutrients, the pollination, all kinds of things. So I would say that's a pretty big yes.
So good. Well, there are a lot of people who really like animals, so that animals can be part of permanent culture then.
Yeah. We got bees and chickens and raccoons and all kinds of critters in our garden and coming through it.
Well, I'm not sure about the raccoons, but the bees and the chickens, yes. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're looking for some permanence in a very impermanent world. We've got Trathan Heckman with us, who's a permaculturalist, a bioneer, and one of the honchos at an organization called dailyacts.org. Check that out. What they specialize in having people do some daily acts that make a difference. And we are trying to make a difference. This is the Food Chain Radio program. We'd like to open the program up for questions. If you have questions about permaculture, give us a ring, 831-479-1080. Right back. Hey, we're back. Michael Olson. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Folks, you know, we look around and what do we see happening around us these days? We see $16 trillion in debt. We see flash mobs of rioters. We see a clash of civilizations. No matter which way we look, it just does not seem to look good. So today we're looking toward ourselves and see if we can do something to take charge of this chaos and use what we have, and we have so much. We have an intelligent mind, we have strong bodies, we have the hands with opposing thumbs. We can hold on to tools and do things with them. So why can't we build some permanence in this world of change? And that's what we're doing today with Trathan Heckman. He of dailyacts.org, a permaculturalist, a biologist, and we are talking permanent culture in an impermanent world. Trathan, we're talking about the personal elements, you know, the fact that we do have to make a commitment to opening up to what nature has to offer us, which is so much. And that's not really all that easy if we're totally subsumed in the cacophony of day-to-day life in the city. We have our iPads, we have our iPhones, we have our computers, we have our music. It's so easy to become subsumed into that. So somehow we have to be inspired. We have to walk into that Wattles Farm community garden or that Aptos community garden or your community gardens, and we have to kind of get bowled over to the sense that there is life, and life can bring us so much. And then there is the earth. We start with soil. Got to have the soil, and it has to be good soil. Can you build soil in the city, Trathan?
Yeah, there's lots of great models of people applying permaculture and related activities in super dense urban areas or, you know, slightly suburban edges.
There you are. So how do you start building soil?
Composting, obviously, you know, keeping it on site is a really key thing. You know, people, I've seen worm box vermiculture coffee tables to where in the middle of an apartment living room or something, you have a nice coffee table and you open the lid up and there's worm composting. There's, you know, backyard composting, harvesting a lot of the waste streams. We live in this time, as people know, with an enormous amount of waste. And so we could be harvesting, you know, which a lot of people are doing nowadays, mm-hmm. veggie oil from restaurants, coffee grounds from coffee shops.
You know what this is starting to remind me of? of a book written by F.H. King, who was the Secretary of Agriculture back at the turn of the last century. And he went to China and was kind of bowled over by the farmers there, and he wrote a book called Farmers of 40 Centuries. And he talked about how it was really the alertness and efficiency of the gray matter of the mind that allowed that country to support so many people on such little land. I guess that would be a good example of permaculture, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And what else do we need besides soil?
Healthy soil, beneficial plants and animals. As you've mentioned multiple times, conscious human stewards. Working with the structures on site, you know, that the water off the roof, your different surface areas, whether you want to keep out different elements, be it wind or sun or noise. And so just sort of working with what's existing. How do you channel the water off your roof and use it to fill up a tank? And when the tank fills up, where do you direct your overflow? Mm-hmm. You know, and so adding those elements of soil, catching and cycling your water, your rainwater, your gray water, bringing in the beneficial combination of plants and animals, working with the structures, and again, having some mindful human stewards. And if you put those elements together, that's when the systems start to go pop.
Now, in our community, we're short of water, but we're always short of water, but only in some seasons. In many seasons, we have too much water. So there's this imbalance in the seasons of water. Once you're talking about gray water, it's kind of like a way of smoothing that out before having to go to desalination plants, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, always starting with reducing use first of, you know, low flow toilets or composting toilets, changing your aerators and those sort of things. But yeah, the gray water, and gray water is an incredible permaculture success story from an angle too. You know, it's an element in the design. And just a couple of years ago in the state of California, gray water systems, they were legal but very difficult to get through. And so by we put in the first permitted single household gray water system in Sonoma County, and then started working with an alliance in the county and around the state, and collectively a whole bunch of us, like with the work of Laura Allen and Gray Water Action, shifted the California state policy. And now we're in the middle of a 100 gray water challenge. This weekend, we're working with the city of Santa Rosa. They have 40 residents in a workshop that will potentially come out with dozens of gray water systems this weekend. We just did the largest community-powered gray water course in the U.S. last month with over 70 participants from the city of Cotati and city of Petaluma, and we started installing 27 gray water systems, laundry to landscape systems.
And it sounds like you're doing some hard work there. Now, so we have our elements of environment. We have our soil. We have our water. We have good plants. We have beneficial critters, and some not so beneficial, like the raccoons.
Yeah, were at my door last night.
Yeah. Okay, we have these elements, but now what do we do? I mean, you talk about design of the permaculture system. Where did we get the design?
Well, you know, your entire life, how you do your work, run your organization, live in your backyard and your neighborhood, you apply design everywhere, to your from a personal ecology to regenerative policy. But, you know, learning it by example, learning it by taking a permaculture design course or by reading different permaculture books, going to, you know, we have, in addition to Bioneers, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, this next weekend, we actually have the first regional transition conference, which is this international movement that's citizen and solution powered, rooted in permaculture. The next weekend after that, we have a permaculture regional convergence that people should attend.
So it sounds like permaculture stuff all over the place.
Definitely. Well, and just right now is a powerful convergence.
So people could probably, wherever they live, just Google permaculture in my town or something, and there they are, so they can get tuned into the permaculture. But that being said, I mean, give us a step one. What is the first thing we do to design a permaculture garden?
Well, like you said, the step one or pre-step one is, you know, we talked about getting inspired, observing and interacting and seeing an example of what it might look like. So it always starts with observation and then thinking about, you know, from a design perspective, mimicking nature are some real obvious ones. It's also, you know, a lot of people already doing great green things, and not that everything needs to be couched in permaculture, but one way I heard it explained is thinking about a closet. And within that closet, from one perspective, you could have sustainable agriculture and intentional communities and green housing and natural building and organic farming and biodynamic and all these different pieces. And from one way of looking at it, permaculture is the closet of where those coat hangers fit and how the elements fit together. And so it could be that people are already doing really great things in their lives that are green, mm-hmm. composting, growing food, keeping bees, whatever. And so permaculture is just, it's this design lens to look at how all these parts fit together functionally.
Well, I hope it's not like my closet, Tracy. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking about getting a hold of our lives, our world, by taking it upon ourselves to build some permanent culture in a world of shifting sands. With Trathan Heckman, Michael Olson, and you, right back. Do stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. Food Chain Radio Program. We're building some permanence into an impermanent world with Trathan Heckman, biologist or permaculturalist, bioneer, and dailyacts.org. Give that a check out. Trathan's doing some awful interesting work getting people to grow gardens. How many gardens are you growing up there?
It's tough to say. One sort of measure indicator, we started this thing called the 350 Garden Challenge several years ago, which then became the 350 Home and Garden Challenge. And in the first year, we mobilized the planting and revitalization of 629 gardens, mainly in a weekend.
Wait a minute. 629 gardens in one weekend?
629 gardens registered, mostly in Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. This last year, we had over 2,000 home and garden actions registered in mid-May. And this is something we work with Transition US to spread around the United States, too.
You're kind of like a jihadist, aren't you?
Yeah, cultural jihadist from a positive sense.
A biological jihadist.
And you had asked earlier, there's a lots of important steps for starting at home. But I want to pause back and because if you live in this area, and you could Google it and find out good information if not, but there 3 weekends in a row, there's 3 really unique and incredible activities coming up. And Transition Santa Cruz is a group that's doing this work as well, that's involved in the first Northern California Regional Transition Conference. And that's on Saturday, October 6th, mm-hmm. and you could find out about that at transitionus.org. And that's incredible permaculture and community-powered solutions. The next weekend is the annual regional permaculture convergence, which is also in Northern California. And you could find out about that. There's some incredible speakers. And just get information if you go to the website. And that's permacultureconvergence.com.
Now, one of the things I've noticed about permaculture is that you're really wired, aren't you? I mean, kind of wired together in a worldwide network of permaculture enthusiasts.
It's definitely, that's another thing that it is. It's this global movement, it's this design science, but it is a global movement.
Do you ever have any Burning Mans or anything like that together where you get together and...
Well, there's these regional convergences that occur in different places around the world, and every other year there's an international permaculture convergence. And Jeff Lawton, if you Google his name, he's one of the most incredible permaculturists doing this work all over the planet. He's one of the keynote speakers at the workshop or at the convergence in a couple weeks.
Well, okay, I'd like to talk with you now about the hard part of all of this, which essentially is how do we sustain permanence in this impermanent world? And I'd like to lead this off by asking you the question, do you think that the powers of be actually want you to be so free?
I'd say of course not, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. It goes against a lot of agendas, right? Like the big oil agenda, which is causing massive problems and putting our very livability and future mm-hmm. at risk.
What about the big government agenda of having people running around being free?
Yeah. Honestly, and that's where, which I appreciate folks who do put their energy there, where I and we've put our energy. And permaculture is very hands-on. It's biological mm-hmm. solutions in your backyard. It's starting with your daily actions. And so we focus on the things that we could influence. You know, oftentimes I think about the state of the world of the government, and that seems so big and overwhelming and unchangeable. But then I look at the fact of, like, wow, we start with daily actions, and we've actually helped change two California state laws and mobilize thousands and thousands and thousands of gardens and actions and that. And so, and then you put that together from like a local or regional group like Daily Acts into a national, international movement, the transition movement, and pioneers these related efforts. And so it's not the only way to go, but by focusing on, again, that most accessible whole system, it's
which of course is ourselves, right?
Exactly.
And so by focusing on what we can do and what we can build with the intelligence of our mind, with the strength of our body, and with the work of our hands, maybe we can pull this some permanence together and stand up to that world of change out there, and that probably doesn't want us to be so free, to be so strong, and to be so healthy. Gosh, do you think it'll work?
You know, if you're looking with honest eyes and an open heart at the state of things out there, there's practicing non-attachment, I think, is a really powerful and important thing, because we're headed towards a place that no amount of regenerative solutions, 11 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century that we're on track for, is a different planet. You know, so it's a piece, too, that I want to bring in of, as much as we focus on solutions, the work of Bill McKibben and 350.org, who also has a big U.S.-wide event coming up in November to do some of the important stopping work, so that amongst the other problems, the, you know, oil companies aren't able to release and burn all the oil that will literally fry our climate. And so putting energy into the stopping work while focusing on the power of your choice or your solutions and getting your community more rich, more resilient. And then, you know, to me is the personal ecology piece of just, you know, practicing non-attachment with it all and just doing the best we can every day and then, you know, being with what is.
Well, I have a question for you when we come back, and it relates to an experience I had in Milwaukee. And I was walking through the snowy streets of Milwaukee, and I came upon the most unusual sight. It was an old stone church, and there was a young gal standing in that church, in the door of that church in the winter Milwaukee, and she was cursing at the top of her voice as loud as she could for as long as she could. And I'm just wondering if permaculture can't change that culture right back. Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio, coming to the end of the show. So much to do, so little time to do it in. I'm going to try picking up Dan. Dan, do you have a comment for us?
A quick question. I'm building a biodynamic site, and Michael and I subscribe to Acres USA. It's a soils publication, and they periodically have articles on cosmic biodynamic pipe broadcasters. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not. I'm familiar with biodynamics, but not the cosmic pipe broadcasters.
Oh, okay. They're kind of expensive, and I'm inclined to get one.
Sorry, no help there.
All right, okay. Thank you very much for the call, Dan. All right. Well, let's back to my question. You know, building permanence in this impermanent world is really going to require that we start with our first element in the mix, which is people. And there are so many of us now that are hurting at that image of that little gal standing in the doorway of that church in Milwaukee and the snow-covered streets just cursing the most foul language that I've ever heard at the top of her voice. And I just wonder, is there a way we can reach people with permaculture and with plants? And can we bring them into the garden, and will they open up? And if they don't, then what?
Yeah, you know, don't know for every person, but nature heals. And I often think of the words of Joanna Macy, who said something like, the heart that breaks many times is big enough to contain the whole universe, and that your heart's that big, you know, and so a loving heart and healing connection to the land and community has incredible power. I've seen it transform people's lives time and time again. So, you know,
Do you ever read The Secret Garden?
I haven't.
By Francis Burnett? Ah, no. Well, there you go. Good one for your kid. Get a kid, read them that Secret Garden. And I just think of that gal standing in the churchyard, and if we couldn't bring her into a community garden or a garden of some kind, and maybe that's what we need to do with everything. And that's kind of where Trathan Heckman is going, isn't it? You're just going to build gardens until everybody's in a garden.
It's an important part of it, you know, and we have a front yard garden with 60, 70 different types of food and medicinal plants, and multiple times I've had people come by, and I'm out picking some basil in the front yard, and you know, someone will say, "Excuse me, sir," and I turn around, and there'll be a woman in a business suit, and she says, "I just want to let you know your garden makes me really happy. You know, it saves 60-80% of the resources, it's more rich, resilient, has all these benefits," and she may or may not see or know that, but she gets it in some level. You know, I've had multiple people say that it just makes them happy. You know, and that's an important piece of it, too.
That's probably the most important piece, don't you think? Where can people? How do people start? How does one get started?
Like I said, there's a ton of great resources out there. You've mentioned dailyacts.org. We do tours, workshops, activities. This upcoming weekend, the regional transition conference at transitionus.org, the permaculture conversion.
Trathan's everywhere doing everything.
Well, not just me. I'm just, you know, I was looking at when I was having this ratio. I'm like, God, there are three incredible weekends coming up.
So people should just start tuning in, right?
Yeah. I mean, Bioneers, you know, was a huge impact for me to be overwhelmed by the state of the world and go to this conference where there's 2,000 plus people just focused on solutions and celebration was, you know, I couldn't say the impact it had on me and our work.
Trathan Heckman, dailyacts.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you all out there for tuning in the Food Chain. Remember, cheap food isn't. Now, see you next week for more What's Eating What Radio on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.